Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. That was John Fogerty, center field, on the Friday, May the 24th, 2013 edition of the Phil Nason Show. And I'll tell you what, I am excited to bring this show to you at 5 p.m. Eastern on Max Sports Channels. And again at 10 p.m. Eastern on Talk Superstation. And at various times throughout the day on Independent Radio LA. Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. We've got a great show planned for you tonight. Coming up later on, Alex Hall from Athletics Nation will be talking Oakland A's baseball, followed by Eric Steven from True Blue LA. We'll be doing Los Angeles Dodgers baseball. But up first, for the New York Mets Weekly Report, our good friend from bloggingmets.com, please welcome Mr. Mark Berman. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
Thanks. I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm fantastic. I tell you what, I'm getting used to being up all night now.
And well, that's exciting.
And up all day. But other than that, it's fantastic.
Hey, we're doing better than the Mets.
Absolutely. We're breathing, at least.
Yeah, that's true.
Because when I watch them, sometimes I'm not so sure if they are.
It's incredible. I mean, you know, we all knew they weren't going to hit, but they all just stopped hitting at the same time, except for David Wright.
Yeah, well.
No one's hitting.
Rick Ankiel's been a pleasant addition thus far.
Yeah, you know, when they signed him, like, most of the bloggers, most of the articles I read were pretty critical of it. And I was like, why not give him a shot? And he's doing well. He has 2 home runs in 9 games, 6 RBIs, batting .323. He's already one of the top sluggers on the team.
Yeah, he is. He's carrying this week he batted .348.
Yeah.
He's getting it done. I was one of those critical guys, and we'll see, you know. But, might as well get the elephant out of the room. Ike Davis is just abysmal. His slash line of .147, .236, .368 is pretty much pathetic. He's got pitchers hitting better than him this year. Listen to this. He bat this week, the last 7 days, he's got a .048 batting average.
What is he, 1 for his last 38 or something like that?
Yeah, he's 1 for the last 21.
21.
Same thing.
Oh, he's one for his last 38 with runners in scoring position, I think.
Okay, maybe like that's what it is. But
yeah,
he's just abysmal. And they say they're going to give him a little more time. Ugh. They got to send him down to Las Vegas, don't you think?
You know, I've been saying all along not to send him down. You know, last year we talked about it and I was against sending him down. And so up until the past couple of days, I've been against it this year too. Because the thing is, if you send him down and he doesn't do well, what happens then? Does he never come back? But and I would have let him wanted to see him work out his problems here. But now, I mean, he's hitting .147. That's just, you know, last year at this time he was hitting, you know, .160 something. So not that that's great, but it's a little bit better. But yeah, he just looks awful. He's carrying it all into the field. He's had some really silly plays, mental mistakes he's made the past couple of weeks in the field. I think they do have to send him down.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with him. I think my trade idea last year looks better and better all the time.
Yeah.
They could have gotten somebody for him then. Now, I don't think they could get a bag of baseballs.
No.
Good Lord.
After what happened last year, doing it again, yeah. He's got no value whatsoever.
Someone told me that Ike Davis only hits when the season's over.
And what does that mean exactly?
Well, what he meant was this. After the All-Star break, when the Mets are out of it, that's when he gets alive.
I don't think that's the case, but maybe he's one of these guys where the pressure gets to him. Although at this point, there's no pressure standings-wise.
Can't be. I know, yeah. But
yeah, I don't know.
I looked it up, and it's pretty close to true. You know, his rookie season when he came up, he was raking like crazy and then, well, got hurt, right?
No, the second year he got hurt.
Second year, I'm sorry. But the first, when he came up, the Mets were already out of it, and he went on a tear. And last year, the same thing. They were out of it. He went on a tear. This year, jeez, I don't think he could tear that batting tape. He's awful.
Yeah, it's sad to see because obviously the guy's got potential. Apparently he's really popular in the clubhouse. He's a good teammate and they're really all pulling for him, but it's sad. I mean, he just looks clueless up there.
So now who replaces him?
See, that's the problem. I mean, as poor as he's performing, Mets don't have anyone else who could even that you can count on to do better. They have Zach Lutz and Josh Satin in the minors. Lutz is on the 40-man roster. Satin's not. So the odds of Satin coming up are somewhat remote unless they're going to get rid of someone else. And, you know, Zach Lutz, who's to say he's going to be any better? I think their best move would be to move Lucas Duda. Well, I'd like to move Lucas Duda to another franchise. But at this point, move him to first base because he's just awful in the outfield. He looks worse and worse. Move him to first base. Put someone in the outfield. You know, again, who do you put in the outfield to replace him? It's just it's a really awful, awful team. It really is. There's just no alternatives anywhere.
You know, I've got an idea. Hey, this is what I would do. I would move Daniel Murphy over to first.
Okay.
I would bring Jordani Valdespina to play second, which is his natural position. Leave Duda out there because he can't get much worse. And hope that Ike Davis can start hitting in the minors and then trade him at the All-Star break.
Well, first of all, even if he gets in the minors, I don't think anyone would trade for him. I'd be very surprised. It's not a bad idea to move Murphy to first because that was his best position when he played there. But if it's going to be a temporary thing, I wouldn't do that because you don't want to mess up what he's doing at second because he's starting to become a competent second baseman. But I see what you're saying though.
Because here's the thing: once Ike Davis goes down, he's not coming back.
He might not. I mean, yeah, if he doesn't hit, what happens? Although, if you remember, they sent Lucas Duda down last year because he was struggling. He didn't hit in the minors, and they brought him back up anyway. So the same thing could happen.
Right, but I have this feeling that Alderson's finished with him and Terry Collins is finished with him, and they're just going to hope he turns it around down in AAA and trade him for something as a part of a package.
Perhaps. Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned last week, he's a non-tender candidate already. I mean, he's making $3 million this year. Even if he doesn't get better, he'll still make around the same next year, if not a little more. And it's not, just not worth it. And if they can't trade him, then they can't really tender him a contract. It would be ridiculous.
So basically, the Ike Davis era in New York is probably over.
Well, I'm not ready to say that yet because I do think he can turn it around. But you're not wrong to think to speculate on that.
Thank you, because I really because I'm fed up with him, as you know. I was fed up last year. But then I picked him up the day after I said, let's trade him on my fantasy team, and he raked like crazy.
See, and now you're turning on him. All right, fair weather friend.
See, I stopped getting attached to these guys after they traded Tom Terrific, as you know. So yeah. I don't trust the front office either.
No, me neither.
I don't know. But outside of putting Murphy there, I think you could probably get away with putting Justin Turner over there for a while too.
Maybe. I wrote earlier this year that I think their plan was to hopefully have Davis do something, be able to trade him and move Lucas Duda to first. Because for some reason they love Lucas Duda because he can walk and is clearly is not an outfielder. So I think that's their long term plan. And I think now it's gonna happen. It could happen with them just releasing Davis, you know, or non-tendering him at the end of the year. And next year having Duda at first, which would just be awful because Duda is useless.
Yeah, and Ike Davis, man, he has such an upside, though. That's the hard part about this whole thing. Is like last year, he really came on at the end of the season, ended up with, what, 32 bombs?
Mm-hmm.
Sheesh, what a pity.
You know, I know, even if he does it again, he turns things around and he hits 30 homers or 25 or whatever, you can't trust him going into next season. Because it happened 2 years in a row to struggle like that. So what do you do? I really don't know what you do here. It's a tough decision.
You know, that's why I'm convinced that someone might take a chance on this kid in a trade. They won't give much. They'll give hardly anything for him.
Right.
But he does have an upside.
Yeah. Yeah. If they can get anything in a trade, it would be almost nothing. Because especially if the rest of the season plays out this way, everyone's going to know he's a possible non-tender candidate. So why would anybody give anything of any value for him if they can get him for free?
Yeah, that's possible. But then the Mets front office does stupid things sometimes.
Ugh. It's ridiculous how bad this team is. And Alderson, the media is starting a little bit to start to blame him, which is good because he's fully responsible for this team. But he tends to skate by. Oh, you know, I inherit all these bad contracts. Well, you know, that excuse is over. That's nonsense.
Well, I'll tell you what, New York media, Google, fire Sandy Alderson, and guess where you heard it first.
I've been saying it for a long time.
Yeah, the grumpy old Mets fans.
Yeah, it's true. He's awful.
He's awful. I don't understand him. You know what else is a pity is Terry Collins. When you listen to his post-game press conferences, he can't even talk anymore. I'll bet you that poor fella sits in his office, closes the door, cracks a beer, and talks to himself.
Yeah, I mean, he knows he's going to get fired at the end of the season. He knows he's going to take the fall for this, even though it's completely not his fault. But he knows it's going to happen.
What a horrible thing, too, because none of this is his fault.
Not at all.
I mean, okay, he does some silly things sometimes, but what manager doesn't?
Yeah.
You know, Tony La Russa was infamous for silly things, and look how his career worked out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think Collins is as good as La Russa, but Collins is not as bad as the Mets record.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And you know what? The good thing is that he'll probably get a job now, because before, when he was in Houston, he had all those issues with getting along with players. Then he went to Japan. He came back. He says, I'm a changed man. And he's proven it. He's really a player's manager. I think the Met players love the guy.
I think so, too. You know what? I would actually be kind of surprised if he got another job, because he's already, mid-60s, I think?
Well, I think he's early 60s, 61.
Early 60s, okay. I think even though this isn't his fault, this is the third place he's been where he hasn't won. He would be more expensive than to give a younger guy a chance. So I really think this is it for him. And it's unfortunate, because it's not warranted. But I think this is going to be his last job.
You know what I wish? That people would stop talking about Wally Backman as some kind of savior.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I'd like to see him get a shot, but who has any idea if he's any good?
Apparently, but he's pretty good in the minors.
Yeah. Well, and he got that job in Arizona for like a week before all that other stuff came out.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he's not a savior. I mean, nobody can – we said this last week. Nobody can win with this team. Put Tony La Russa, Joe Torre, Casey Stengel. No one's going to win with this terrible team.
I was thinking of resurrecting Casey Stengel and have him manage now just for the hell of it. It could be just like the 62 Mets.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Wouldn't it be cool? Because they're probably going to end up with identical records. So.
Yeah, and you have a corpse in the clubhouse. That's pretty cool.
It matches the guys out in the field.
That's a good point.
I mean, they don't just wear eye black. They wear black all over their faces.
But I want to tell you.
Because they're just bad. You know, it's hard to even watch. It really is. It's just hard to watch. I still like watching Matt Harvey pitch.
Oh, yeah. He's just great. Even yesterday, Wednesday, he didn't have a great game, but he still pitched well enough to win. Yeah, he's a pleasure to watch. He really is.
This guy has 74 strikeouts in 71 innings. If they don't shut him down, and I think they're probably going to shut him down around 180 because this team sucks and why hurt him, he could wind up with 200 strikeouts.
Yeah, I hope they don't shut him down.
I hope not either.
I really hope they don't.
Because that's the only reason to watch.
Yeah.
Of course, Zach Wheeler, the next savior, is on his way soon, probably.
He'll come within a few weeks. It's funny how Alderson insists it's got nothing to do with the Super 2 nonsense. Yet, you know, and the media is buying into this. It makes me laugh how people are saying, oh, yeah, it's got to do with his development, not Super 2. It has everything to do with Super 2. Anyone who thinks that it doesn't is just insane.
Otherwise, he'd already
about money with these guys.
Yep. Otherwise, he'd already be there with the team.
Yep. Absolutely.
Because Collins says, "Hey, give me him now."
Right.
Might as well. I mean, how much worse can it get?
Yeah.
And this kid's already taking cortisone, Mark. This isn't good. He's 22 years old.
Yeah. That was not a good thing. But he pitched yesterday on Wednesday. He pitched well. You know, he I don't know. His stats weren't that great, but I think he pitched okay.
Yeah. You can't judge these guys by the PCL.
Right. Right. But at least he was on the mound. He was throwing, you know, a week after getting whatever shot he got. So that's a good sign.
Absolutely. Great stuff tonight, Mark. Thanks so much.
Thanks. No problem.
All right. That was Mark Berman, and you can find him at bloggingmets.com. Coming up next, Alex Hall will join us for the weekly Oakland A's Report, and we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
Somebody's going to be having fun tonight.
All I want to do is go have a good time. It's all about
tonight. Bill Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern.
Okay, well, let's go party. Yeah, tomorrow can
wait till tomorrow. Ah, it's a lot of fun. I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight. And we'll have fun, I promise. Yeah, it's all
about tonight. Weeknights on the Talk Superstation. It's all about tonight.
If you're moving to the Atlanta area or simply looking to buy that new dream home, we'll look no further than to real estate agent Latricia Friesen. Latrissa has over 10 years in real estate experience, and she's anxious to put you in your brand new home. For more information, you can contact Latrissa at latrissa.com. That's LETRISSA.com. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com. Are you tired of boring sports websites that's about the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. The Reggie commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived. Looking for the latest information on your favorite sports team? Why not check out 15-year-old founder Trevor Urenz, prosportsextra.com. Updated daily by a staff of over 30 writers, prosportsextra.com is the place to be. You can check them out, and I insist that you do, at prosportsextra.com. Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com. Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination. Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Joining me on the line for the weekly Oakland Athletics Report is none other than AthleticsNation.com. Mr. Alex Hall. Alex, how you doing today?
The swinging A's are back, Phil.
I guess they are. What's going on with the start? Okay, I'll tell you what. What's happening with the starting pitching?
Lots of good things. Last week, I came on here and told you a bunch of horror stories about Oakland starting pitching and how poorly it was doing. And this past week, they really came around and started showing some signs of life. And we're going to start that off with Jared Parker. His struggles were very well documented in April, and his very most recent start a few days ago, it began very poorly. His first four batters of the game were a sharp single, a homer to the second deck, a flyout, and a homer about 600 feet to dead center. Not a good start to the game. And right there in the first inning, you can just hear people scrambling for, when are we going to call up Sonny Gray? When are we going to release this guy? Blah, blah, blah. Well, then he settles down, throws the next 6 2/3 innings after that, gives up only 3 hits and a walk, ends up with a line of 7 innings, 3 runs, 6 hits, 5 strikeouts. That's a quality start. That's a very good start that will get you a win more often than not. In this case, it didn't. The A's lost because they couldn't hit anything. They could not drive in any runners at all. But Parker, on his own, actually put up a pretty good start. Not only that, another thing I was talking about last week was he was struggling to make it through that third time through the order, and he did not have that problem this time. He just jammed straight through. He went 3 times through the order. If anything, it was that first time through the order that gave him the problem until he settled down. So now I look at his last 3 starts combined, 20 1/3 innings, 7 runs, 13 hits, 15 strikeouts to 7 walks. That's not amazing. That's not an ace, But that is solid. That is marked improvement over what he has been doing, you know, posting 7 or 8 ERAs in April. Suddenly, I'm looking at a guy who is once again putting his team in a position to win. And if he can keep building on that, maybe he can still turn into that number one, number two starter that we were hoping to see this year. So I'm pretty excited about the progress he has been making. Another guy is Dan Straley. Last week I was talking about, is it time to pull him from the rotation? Well, all he did after that was go out to Texas, face Yu Darvish, out-duel him, throw 7 shutout innings, only 2 hits, didn't walk a batter, 5 strikeouts. Again, out-dueled Yu Darvish, who's among the best pitchers in the majors so far this year, ends up winning a 1-0 game. And so now you have to sit and wonder, well, maybe Straley needs a couple more starts. You know, maybe he's earned himself a little more time in the rotation. So there's 2 guys who have been struggling a lot. And if they come around, suddenly this is a very different A's team.
I'll tell you what, Parker threw good. This past week, the last 7 days, man, 14 innings pitched, 10 hits, 4 runs, 4, or I'm sorry. Yeah, 4 runs and 4 earned runs, 2 dingers, 3 walks. But I'll tell you what, Straley pitched good too. And I agree with you. I thought he should have got sent down. And I dumped him from my fantasy team, and I shouldn't have.
Well, I don't think.
I had Yu Darvish on the same team too.
Dumping him before a start in Texas was probably a prudent course of action. But the fact is, the starting pitching is coming around. The rest of the team has been playing just fine this whole time. It's been that starting pitching that's just digging these holes early in games, not putting the team in a position to win. It's always tougher to come back from behind than to just win outright. And now you've already got Malone and Griffin, who have been steadily, consistently good all year. If you can add in a productive Parker and Straley to that, well, now we're talking about a formidable rotation again. The only thing is, it still seems to be lacking that ace. There's not that Darvish, that Verlander, that David Price, that guy who's going to win you game 1 of the playoffs, the guy who's going to be the stopper every single time, like Bartolo Colon was doing earlier this year. And Brett Anderson was supposed to maybe be that guy. He's still hurt. Jared Parker was maybe supposed to step into that role. Maybe it's not too late for that to happen. But the solid rotation is one thing, but you would like to see that ace really step forward and just be that number one guy. I'm not sure if any of these 4 guys can be that ace. But if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Parker. So we will see how his continued improvement goes.
Yeah, we'll see. I would think it would be Anderson in a way. He seems to be the most poised.
It's not too late for that to happen, but he's going to have to get through not only the injuries he's already sustained, but learn how to not sustain new ones, because it's not just the arm and the shoulder and the elbow, whatever. You know, he's had this Tommy John. He's fixed the elbow. But even his pitching motion, the way that he falls off so violently when he throws, that's why he keeps hurting his ankle. He sprained his ankle on a violent follow through. He'll try to field balls with his bare hand. He'll be walking back to the dugout and trip and fall because he's kind of a clumsy guy, and he knows this. But the point is that these injuries aren't flukes. He hurts himself in these weird ways because of the way that he pitches and because of the way that he is. And he's going to have to work through that somehow and find a way to not sustain these ticky-tack injuries if he wants to be that ace. Because part of being the ace is you've got to be on the field every time. You've got to make the 32 starts. You've got to make that first start in the playoffs, or else what kind of ace are you? But where we do have some aces is in the bullpen.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, the Oakland bullpen has been lights out, or at least the front half of it. You've got your 3, Grant Balfour, Ryan Cook, and Sean Doolittle. Let's give you some ERAs here. Balfour, 147. Cook, 174. Doolittle, 090. They're each striking out more than a batter per inning. They're each striking out over 25% of the batters they face. Cook and Doolittle are at 30% of the batters they face. That is extremely good. Not only that, Balfour is walking a little, or maybe walks are a little bit too high, but they're not a big problem. Cook, on the other hand, is keeping the walks down much better than, more like he did in the second half last year when he cut his walk rate down. Doolittle's striking out 7 batters for every walk he issues. That dude's got control. He's not throwing super hard. In the 93-94 range is his average, but he's got the control to pull it off, and he can place those pitches, and he's got the deception to fool the hitters. and he's making it work with nothing but a 93.5-mile-an-hour fastball. Honestly, Cook or Doolittle could be a closer right now. And you're seeing they're getting that. They're shortening the game like those old Yankees teams from 10, 15 years ago used to with Rivera and Stanton and Nelson. Once you get to these guys at the end, you're not going to come back. It's just not going to happen. I mean, these three guys. And then you add in Jerry Blevins sitting on a 199 ERA. He struck out 20 batters this year. He has issued one walk, 20 strikeouts to one walk. He's struck out 24% of the batters he's faced. And so you throw him into the mix. Now you're talking about, is this currently the best four-man relief corps in the majors? And I'm not exaggerating here. Because these guys are, I mean, they might fall off a little bit, but none of these guys are so far over their heads that you can't see them continuing to be extremely good all year. Blevins, I think, he'll start walking a few guys. He'll come up a little bit. But Balfour, Doolittle, Cook, these guys are for real, and they're going to be good all year unless someone gets hurt. I look around, you got guys like Kimbrel and his squad in Atlanta. You got the Nationals bullpen. Sure, they're very good. I think the A's are right there with any of them right now. Now you've got Hideki Okajima has been brought up. He's in the mix. You don't really know how he'll do. He's getting in his late 30s. The velocity is falling off a bit, but he's been lights out in the past. You know, he had a decent initial outing through a shutout inning his first time out. We will see if he can make that a five-man lights out bullpen squad.
I'll tell you what, these guys didn't give up a run last week. Balfour, Blevins, Cook, Doolittle, Neshek, and Okajima. They didn't give up a single freaking run, did they?
Now, I think, I might be mistaken, I think Ryan Cook did blow a save. I think he allowed an inherited runner and blew a save.
Nope.
Might be wrong about that, but that sounds familiar. But I believe, if I'm remembering right, he blew the save and the A's came back and won anyway.
Okay, maybe. Maybe that's when Cook, or that's when Blevins got the win.
That might have been.
But he didn't give up a run, not an earned run anyway.
Nope.
Nothing. Straight goose eggs across the board. That's a darn good thing to have, by the way.
It is. And you know, these bullpens, they fluctuate so much. They might be really strong one month, and then they could all fall off. These guys can get hurt at the drop of a hat, you know, coming in and throwing their arms out as hard as they can, trying to blow it past hitters. So you don't want to count too heavily on that bullpen still being there in September. But as it is right now, man, are they a strength or what? They are just killing it right now.
You know, my friend Mark Berman, he says that the bullpen is nothing more than has-been starters. And you can't put a good one together. It's difficult to have one over the whole season. I think he's right.
But
so far, so good, huh?
That's right.
You can't beat that. Now, offensively, the A's are hitting the ball a little more too now. They were slumping when we talked last week, but it seems to me that they've kind of turned that around. Josh Donaldson still hitting, Jed Lowry, Seth Smith is hitting, Yoannis Cespedes is hitting again. Things are looking up in Oakland A's world, eh?
Yeah. So the hitting is definitely coming around. Now, when I look at the scores of these wins recently, 2-1, 2-1, 4-3, 9-2, 1-0. Okay, so they're not smashing their opponents into submission, but they are at least scoring some runs. They're hitting some homers. They've all been solo homers lately. They're sitting on a streak right now. It's something like 14 straight homers. The last 14 they've hit have all been solo. That's not a streak that will last. They will get some guys on base in front of these. They had a little trouble with situational hitting in their last game. They had some chances to drive in some runners from third with zero or one outs, and they couldn't do it. But again, these things vary and fluctuate. Overall for the season, they've been above average in these situational hitting, in hitting these sac flies and getting runners home. So I expect that they will be just fine. But Cespedes, man, you know, it's funny how when Yoannis Cespedes starts hitting, the A's start winning again and vice versa. He's been back from the DL for a little bit, but he was really struggling for a while. In fact, that batting average dropped below 200 for a minute. But suddenly, on May 19th, the last game against the Royals, there was a tie game going into the eighth. And what do you know? Cespedes walks up, hits a solo homer, 4-3, final score. There he is. Two games later against Darvish, Cespedes homers to dead center, practically falling over. I think of sometimes Adrian Beltre will hit a home run and he'll come to his knee when he hits it. And you're like, did he just homer from his knees? Well, Yoenis Cespedes homered falling over to dead center off possibly the best pitcher in the American League. And then the A's won the game 1-0. So there's two games in the last week in which Cespedes hit the game winning home run. And, you know, we've looked at that stat before of what the A's record is when Cespedes plays and when he doesn't. And I know there's still a lot of correlation in there. You don't want to just say, well, they only win when he's in the lineup, or they only win because he's in the lineup. But, man, it's just hard to ignore when Cespedes is hitting, the A's win. And when he's not, they don't.
That's the truth. Now, this weekend, you've got the Astros. You're traveling to Houston. That's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that it's that rivalry with the San Francisco Giants.
That's right. This is going to be a big week for the A's. They're coming off winning 5 out of 6 against the Royals and the Rangers. Boy, did they need that. Back over 500. Back to that point where you don't have to look at the scoreboard anymore because they're not 7 or 8 or 9 games back anymore. And now you get 3 against the Astros. So far, the A's have won all 6 matchups with the Astros. You figure eventually Houston's going to win a game against the A's. Statistically speaking, the A's will not go 19-0 against the Astros. But you got to look at that as a chance to pick up at least 2 out of 3 and pad that win total when you have the chance against the inferior team. And you hope you can ride that momentum into these 4 games against the Giants, not only because the Giants are a fantastic team and you want to beat another winning team, but also, of course, that rivalry, that geographic crosstown rivalry. Yeah, it's a big deal to us as fans. You got to assume that the players at least know what's going on. I mean, you know, if you ask the players, I'm sure they'll say every game is the same. And if you ask Bob Melvin, he'll definitely say that. But I'd be pretty surprised if the A's players don't have a little extra chip on their shoulder, really wanting to beat the Giants. And as fans, boy, you really want to see the A's take at least a split of those 4 against the Giants. But would it be beautiful if they could take 3 out of 4?
There you go. Maybe they can. Alex, great stuff tonight. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right. You can find Alex over at athleticsnation.com, and I insist you do. It is the top Oakland A's website. These guys work hard over there. You'll enjoy the site as much as I do, and they're very friendly over there, too. All right, coming up next, True Blue LA's Eric Stephen will be here to talk Dodger baseball, and we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
Somebody's going to be having fun tonight.
All I want to do is go have a good time. It's all about
tonight. Bill Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern.
Okay, well, let's go party. Yeah, tomorrow
can wait till tomorrow. Ah, it's a lot of fun. I said tomorrow can wait till
tomorrow. It's all about tonight. And we'll have fun, I promise. Yeah, it's all
about tonight. Weeknights on the Talk Superstation. It's all about tonight.
If you're moving to the Atlanta area or simply looking to buy that new dream home, we'll look no further than to real estate agent Latricia Friesen. Latricia has over 10 years in real estate experience, and she's anxious to put you in your brand new home. For more information, you can contact Latricia at latricia.com. That's LETRISSA.com.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Are you tired of boring sports websites that's about the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. The Reggie commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived. Looking for the latest information on your favorite sports team? Why not check out 15-year-old founder Trevor Urenz, ProSportsExtra.com. Updated daily,
by a staff of over 30 writers, ProSportsExtra.com is the place to be. You can check them out, and I insist that you do, at ProSportsExtra.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from The Phil Nasons Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Welcome back to the Phil Nasons Show. We're wrapping things up around here on this Friday afternoon, May the 24th, 2013. And on the line from TrueBlueLA.com is our good friend, Mr. Eric Steven. Eric, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Doing well, Phil. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Fantastic. We're just trying to dodge the storms here. And speaking of storms, there's always something brewing in Dodgerland. Don Mattingly rips the team. He benches Andre Ethier. And what's that all about?
It just seems like the proverbial stuff is hitting the fan this week. It seems with the Dodgers, they were swept over the weekend in Atlanta in a kind of excruciating fashion. It was, you know, the bullpen blew leads in all three games, the sixth inning, the eighth inning, and the eighth inning, but wasn't necessarily all the bullpen's fault because the offense really contributed to that by not really scoring enough runs to, you know, put some games away, perhaps that they should have. But, so there was some sort of speculation that Mattingly could be on his way out. And it's kind of came to a head during their series in Milwaukee. In the last game, he benched Andre Ethier. And then before the game was talking about how he's putting the team out there that he thinks is going to give him the best effort to win. It was just sort of a kind of an indirect shot. He didn't mention Ethier by name, but he was the one who got benched. So it's sort of a shot at Ethier. He hasn't been really trying his hardest, I guess. Or he kept saying, give us the best chance to win. And Scott Van Slyke got the start and actually got two doubles. But it's rare because, he rarely sits Ethier, even against lefties who he struggled against. And then this on Wednesday was against a right-hander who Ethier normally handles. I mean, this year Ethier's numbers are down. But, historically he's been great against right-handers. But yeah, it seems like to me that it was one of those. It looked at the time like almost like a last ditch sort of desperation move, trying to do something because the reason they're going to fire a manager midseason is to shake up the clubhouse, and I think Mattingly's trying to get that shake up, you know, while also keeping his job. So, but it turns out there's more stuff sort of out today. Or on Thursday, I guess, that, suggested both ESPN and the LA Times had this saying that Mattingly met with the front office and Coletti in Milwaukee on, I guess, Tuesday before the benching of Ethier on Wednesday. And he sort of, it was like, they called it a clearing the air meeting and sort of got some stuff off of his chest. And so it seems like, Mattingly, who could have possibly been gone like this week, if they slumped or something, who knows? He might be here for, at least the next couple weeks. But I still think if they go into any sort of a tailspin again, I do think they'll get rid of him. But it seems like for now, the front office sort of has his back. But you never know if that's a permanent thing or if it's the dreaded vote of confidence, you know, that someone always seems to get before they're on their way out. So, but it's certainly it's going to be an exciting 7 days here, and they have home games and then two against the Angels, which are basically close to home games. So should be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of vote for the latter. Usually when the front office says we support our manager, that's the death knell.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
They've had Stan Kasten came out and said, you know, we have no plans to, you know, fire him. We're behind him and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, I guess on one, you have to sort of take him at face value on one level they're not going to say much else right now, you know, even if they sort of had plans to get rid of him. But I think, you know, they did respond. That I'll give them this. The Dodgers did score. They beat them. They beat the Brewers 9-2 on Wednesday, and that's their season high of runs. So I mean, obviously it's one game, and you never know. But at least it worked. Whatever they did sort of worked, and if they could just get sort of everyone on the same track and put some wins together, that's going to be ultimately the thing that would save Mattingly's job. Not some sort of you know, like power play. I don't think he's benching Ethier long term. I think it was just one of those one-time thing that says, hey, we got to get this thing going. And it was a little like kind of light a fire type move. And I think we'll see if it's going to work.
Yeah, I'll bench my favorite guy and I'll show you who's boss.
Pretty much.
That's something else. You know what, though? When you think about it, I've been thinking about this all week. This is none of this is his fault, really.
Is yeah. It? No, it's one of those things. It's never... You know, the manager or it's usually sometimes like either the manager or a hitting coach or someone the players directly work with. Like, you could make an easy argument that the general manager, Ned Colletti, is as much to blame, if not more so, or, you know, he should be the one getting fired if you're going to fire anybody. But you never see like a GM fired midseason because no one really cares. You know, like you fire a GM and all the players in the clubhouse are like, so that doesn't affect my day to day. It's not a shakeup type move. So, but if you fire like a manager or a hitting coach or a pitching coach, those are guys that the players deal with every day. But the problem with the Dodgers is they, in the middle of the 2011 season, they fired hitting coach Jeff Pentland, and then Dave Hansen took over. And then at the end of last season, they let Dave Hansen go, and he's now on the Mariners. So they basically had two straight seasons of let's get rid of the hitting coach. And so Mark McGwire is new. The offense is the problem right now, but I doubt they're going to fire Mark McGwire just a few months into his job when they've already done that like the last 2 years. So this is where it sort of comes in that Mattingly, if they're going to do some sort of shakeup move, it just falls on the manager. It's never fair, you know, this kind of a thing, but that's just how it sort of works. And I think, you know, I went back and looked last spring training in 2012, Mattingly was sort of reflecting on his, at the time, going into his second year as a manager. And he was saying, talking about how all the turmoil in New York when he was a player with George Steinbrenner, because he played under 10 different managers in like 14 years, I think. And then plus there was countless other hitting coach and pitching coach changes. So, and I found this, it was a really good quote. He was basically saying how the players know it's never necessarily the guy's fault for getting fired. They know they have to step up and do something when they see a guy, you know, sort of take the fall for them. So that's generally the MO for a move like this, but you know, it's not necessarily fair, but I think they reach a point where they've lost so many that they can't figure out how to turn this thing around. So let's try something different.
Yeah, I know how that works. I'm a professional tennis coach, as you know. I know how sure. that works. But now let's play a speculation game. If Don Mattingly gets the axe, and it does look like that's going to happen, unless something drastic happens, who's in line for the job?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because you wonder if they do like wholesale changes where they just get rid of a bunch of guys at once. I don't necessarily think that would be the case. I think what the most logical move would be to have Tim Wallach sort of step in. He's a third base coach now. He has managerial experience in AAA with the Dodgers. So I think he would probably be the guy, I would imagine, to sort of step into the role. at least for the on an interim basis. I don't know if it would be like, let's have him finish out the year and then they figure it out in the, during the offseason. The one name people sort of always go to is Tony La Russa, because he's sort of sitting out there and he's retired now. And I don't know. He's sort of denied it because I know he's been linked to the, both the Dodgers and the Angels. People have asked him. But he's been saying steadfastly that he's staying retired. So you don't know if that's a negotiating ploy or whether he does still want to stay retired. But it's really hard to see. I don't haven't really looked at the, you know, possible, you know, managers like, the Marlins sort of dusted off Jack McKean a few years ago and he won the World Series with them. So Jack McKean's actually still out there. So I don't know what you never know. It could be someone we're not even thinking of, but I would imagine just immediate for the immediate move, it would probably be Tim Wallach to take over. That'd be my guess.
Bring back Tommy Lasorda. I love that guy. I don't care what anyone says. You know, I guess I wasn't supposed to be a Dodgers fan, but I loved it when they beat the Yankees. So
yeah,
that was all good. But how old is Tommy Lasorda now?
He is 85. And
shucks. I mean,
good, you know, God bless him. He still gets out there all the time at the stadium. And I mean, I hope I'm alive at 85 to sort of, you know, witness the kind of things he has. But all joking aside, you know, obviously probably wouldn't be the best choice, but it'd be kind of a funny ceremonial thing at least.
Yeah, that would be all right. I'll tell you what, though. Hun Yin Ryu, he's our guy. Number 99 got busy in Milwaukee, didn't he?
He's been very, very solid. He went through a little bit of a stretch there where he had two or three starts where his strikeouts were a little bit down from the first six or seven. But for the most part, through his first 10 major league starts, he's been Mr. Reliable. He's only failed to go six innings one time. He has almost as many strikeouts as innings pitched. Hasn't walked a ton of guys. Has shown real a good amount of poise out there on the mound. Real good control. Has good command of like three or four different pitches. And he's really just been almost, you know, like a real savior to the rotation because, as you know, it's basically been ravaged by injuries. And I know Zach Greinke's back now, but for most of the year, it's basically been Clayton Kershaw, Hun Yin Ryu, and like the rest of the staff have just been sort of scrambling to pick it up. So with Greinke back, and then you have Kershaw and Ryu, it gives the Dodgers at least a semblance of a front end of the rotation that's pretty solid. So you know, it's one if they do want to make a run, that's a good sort of foundation to get behind at least.
Absolutely. What's going on in the injury front while we wrap this up? What's happening there?
I guess since we last talked, they got Mark Ellis back. He missed about 19 games with a strained right quad. They should have Scott Elbert back within the next week or so. He had two elbow surgeries in the offseason. So they're probably going to have they could have a bullpen of three with three different left-handers in it by this time next week, which would be interesting because they usually never do that. But Ted Lilly was activated from the DL, and he's going to start on Saturday, his first start since April 29th. So we're talking almost 4 weeks. And then the other injuries still sort of looming. Well, there's a couple. One, Jerry Hairston has been, he had a groin injury. And while he was rehabbing that, he also hurt his knee, but he's still working through that right now. And then Josh Beckett has a groin injury as well, and he's starting to throw. So he's probably a couple weeks away from returning, but, that I think that's where we're at.
Any news on Hanley Ramirez?
They're sort of taking it slow with him. He's been running a little bit, but not full speed. They want to make sure he's fully healthy before coming back because they don't want him to re-injure the hamstring. But I would imagine 4 to 6 weeks would put him in that first 2 weeks of June coming back. And so I would say either the first week of June or the second week of June, we will probably be able to see him back with the Dodgers.
All right. Great stuff tonight. Thank you so much, Eric.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Phil. Anytime.
Hey, you can, and we'll catch you next week. And you can catch Eric over at True Blue LA, and I insist that you do. It is the top site for Dodger baseball for a reason. It's fantastic. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all my guests for making the show what it is. Coming up on Wednesday, as we're going to take off Monday and Tuesday, I have a golf tournament I have to play in, so I cannot broadcast and prepare and try to play golf. On Wednesday, we're going to talk with the folks from the San Antonio Spurs, as well as the Memphis Grizzlies. On Thursday, Jamie and Smith will be here, as well as Andy Flint. And on Friday, the guys will talk baseball. On Monday and Tuesday, we'll run in the best of shows, and we'll just have to wait and see which ones we're going to put up. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. Be careful out there this weekend on Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day. Good night, and thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.